Today's episode, we're going to answer a few questions from some viewers. One basically looks at the very nature of how we watch baseball. The other is about stars who we didn't get a chance to say goodbye to properly. This is Locked On MLB.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. Thanks for making Locked On MLB your first listen, as we're available on all your free podcasting platforms. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. As you can read right there, you can please call me Sully or Wizard there. Wherever you read it, it's the lower third. Call me Sully. Today's episode is being dropped on Monday, the 20th day of December, 2021. Get your shopping in. Get it done now. Buy a bunch of Todd Radom books. We'll be doing some more answering of listener questions, and some of them have been hanging around for a little while. There's one specific one that's been hanging around for a while, which made me kind of laugh when I dug it back up again. We are here on YouTube, all the platforms. You can follow us at Locked On MLB Pods on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And if you have a smart device, be sure to tell it to play Podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, and with expert analysis from Lee Sterling. Hey, again, we are in the middle of a lockout. We're in the middle of the off season, and so I actually have a lot of fun doing these episodes because I can open up the vaults, ask you all to ask me questions, and I went through some of the old questions too, that have been kind of hanging around for a long time. And there's one or two I'd want to bring up. I want to bring up one that I almost did yesterday when I did a viewer question episode. And that was from Jeff Cohen, who's been a guest on the show, frequently asked questions. In fact, I could do a whole segment of just questions that Jeff Cohen throws my way. And I was going to include this in the previous viewer mail question that I did, episode that I did just a few days ago. And he wrote to me on December 17th, not too long ago, if you had a time machine, and I love time travel, if you had a time machine and you could witness any MLB season, what year would you choose and why? Now, as I've been talking about to death, I feel like I'm doing this to a degree in my research for my 1972 book. There have been a bunch of seasons that I have looked at. And I was going to say 1972, except I've witnessed so much of that in terms of video and listening to the games and everything like that, that I figured that wouldn't be the one. You know, you would think about what players I would want to have seen in person and what years I would want them to have seen that. My first thought was 1941, where I would get to see the Joe DiMaggio hit streak and Ted Williams batting over 400. Seeing Babe Ruth in his prime is another thing that I would want to see. Seeing Sandy Koufax in his prime, seeing Roberto Clemente at his peak. These are all people who I would want to have seen. Henry Aaron, Willie Mays. These are people I've heard about. But then again, I've seen people who are great too. And so I kind of feel like I'd be betraying something that I've always felt about watching baseball. You know, the baseball I watched growing up, the baseball I'm watching to this day, and that is I'm seeing the great players in the context of the players today are standing on the shoulders of the stars who came before them, and before them, and before them, and before them, until we get to Alexander Cartwright playing in the Elysian Fields of New Jersey. Yes, I know, John Thorne, there's things wrong with that story too. I just tried to come up with an origin story, okay? And I know it's not Abner Doubleday. You know, I think about some of the players that I would want to have seen, but then I think about, would there be a sense of disappointment? You know, Babe Ruth, Dizzy Dean, Satchel Paige, these people whose lore has been built up to the point where it almost can't match the reality of it. I'm sure there would be a sense of disappointment if I went back in time and I saw the Babe Ruth, and they're like, oh, okay, there he is. Oh, yeah, he was built up by sports writers and everything. Or maybe he would be as good as he was. I don't know. But I like the myth. I like the narrative. I thought of another element of it, which is maybe I'd want to see some of the great Negro League teams. You know, to see Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Turkey Stearns, cool Papa Bell, Jim Wilson, all these great players, you know, Ray Dandridge, all these players who became Hall of Famers, who became great. Oscar Charleston was supposedly the greatest player of his era. You know, if we're going to be talking about who's the greatest player of all time, supposedly if Oscar Charleston had played in the major leagues, and I believe his era was the 20s and the 30s, same era as Ruth, same era as Garrick, same era as Jimmy Fox, same era as Rogers Hornsby, you know, all these wonderful players who played, would he have been the greatest of that era, or would he have raised everyone else's game? But then again, there is something about the Negro League's legend, is that there's something mythical about those leagues, and we're not sure how great they were. And it's a great tragedy that they never integrated the league. We got to see them all play together. But, you know, I almost don't want to spoil the legend. I almost don't want to spoil the mythology of it. You know, it'd be like if I went back to the Trojan War and I saw Ulysses getting on his boat heading back home. I said, hey, do you mind if I hitch a ride with you? Because I want to see all the things that happened in the Odyssey. It turned out Charybdis, the whirlpool, was just, oh, got a little bit of a whirlpool. And, oh, the sirens, yeah, it's a cave. The mermaids were manatee sitting on a, you know, on a rock. Cyclops was just a big dude who poked his eye. I'd rather read the Odyssey than see what really happened. Sometimes the narrative and the myth is more impressive than what actually happened. You don't want to, I almost don't want to spoil that narrative. But there's another element to it, which is, let's say I go back in time to that season 1941, okay? Because I want to witness Joe DiMaggio. I want to witness Ted Williams. I want to witness this. I want to witness that. I would witness it as a time traveler. Now, if I would really want to go back, maybe I'd try to stop World War II, maybe try to stop the plague, maybe, you know, tell Kennedy to do a U-turn before he turns left on that street. A lot of things I would, you know, use a time machine to do first. Go back, tell me in 1990, buy Google and land in Palo Alto. Trust me, just do it. A lot of things I would do time travel before watching a game. But one of the things that makes baseball to me so thrilling when I watch it is seeing stuff where I don't know what happens. You don't know the outcome. You don't know what the hit is going to be, who the hero is going to be, and sometimes some name will pop up as a hero that you can't even fathom it. Think about, you know, this year, like Jorge Soler becomes a World Series hero. Or think about what happened in 2020 when Phillips came up for the Rays and got that weird hit, and everyone was stumbling around and falling all over each other as the Rays were one strike away from falling 3-1 behind in the series, and suddenly they tied the series with this wild hit, which was completely unpredictable. And a Rosarena had fallen, and the ball got away from the catcher, and it was so unpredictable that that would happen at that moment. And if I know that Joe DiMaggio is going to get 56 hits, or I know that Ted Williams is going to finish at 406, I know this sounds like I'm being a pedantic twit. But it made me think about, that's part of the things I love about baseball, is not knowing. Not knowing that Rajay Davis is going to hit that home run. Not knowing that Adam Wainwright's going to throw that curveball. And Beltran, who is an October monster, watches it fall into the strike zone. Not know that fourth string catcher Francisco Cabrera is going to single-handedly destroy the hope of Pirate fans for generations with one swing of his bat. Not know that the Red Sox are up 3-0 or down 3-0 with Rivera on the mound, and they're somehow going to not lose another game that year. Not know this year that the Cardinals would go on that wild winning streak, or that the Padres and Mets, who look like shoo-ins for the playoffs for about two-thirds or three-quarters of the season, would finish the year with a losing record. It's not knowing these things and watching it unfold is what makes it thrilling for me. And so while it would be interesting to be a voyeur on some of these games, I would hate that I know how it ended. And so I know, Jeff Cohen, this is a fun sort of mind game. And, you know, I guess, I mean, if I'll answer the question, I think I already did. I said I would love to have seen DiMaggio's hit streak. And I also would love to have seen some of the great Negro League players play. But remember, players are better now. Their skills are better now. They are. You may not want to admit that, but they are. They're bigger. They're faster. They throw faster. They hit harder. So would I be saddened to see Josh Gibson may have been the best power hitter of his time, but he would have been, would he have been an okay power hitter now? You know, we've raised the game each generation, and we're always so precious because we don't want anyone to take away the generation that we watch, because we like to think that we watch the best one. But the fact of the matter is this: I don't want it to be spoiled. I want to always be surprised. I don't want to know how it ends. And the great thing about sports in so many ways is the fact that it is drama where none of the participants know how it's going to end. Ideally, none of the participants are, you know, are going to be playing this game in any level other than we're going all out to win. And if we win, that's the best. And if we lose, well, we'll need a consolation, like maybe a Built Bar. And Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar out there. And this holiday season, grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, or even better than a candy bar. The Built Bar is filled with I'm drooling. That's how great it is. With so much holiday goodness, rich with decadent flavor, covered in chocolate, amazingly low in calories, sugar, net carbs, and fat, and high in protein. You get the best of both worlds. You get delicious and healthy and so many flavors. You have a hard time choosing? Are you going to have the mint brownie, cherry, double chocolate, cookies and cream, peanut butter brownie, or my personal favorite one? That's raspberry. People love their flavors. All of us from Locked On, we get our boxes of Built Bars, and we immediately say, do you try this one? Should we try this one? It's great. Dip them in cocoa. This holiday season, it's a great treat to have. And you want to have marshmallowy treats in your cocoa? Then get your hands on Built Bar Puffs. They're light, they're fluffy, they're marshmallowy through and through. Different flavors, all covered in chocolate. They taste so good, you won't believe that they're filled with protein. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15, get 15% off of your order. That promo again is LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com for those Built Bars. I was going through old Sunday requests. This one made me laugh, actually. This was from Mr. John Mayers, J-O-N-M-E-Y-E-R-S. This was way back in 2013, July 27th, 2013. Sunday requests: Will Myers and the Royals. Shouldn't Moore been fired for that trade by now? What is taking so long? That was written in 2013 when Will Myers was on his way and basically was, it looked like it was a disaster for the Royals. They traded away their top prospect, and the, you know, all the Royals got was James Shields and Wade Davis. The fact is, and I did address this later, but that trade wound up paying off in spades for the Royals, as James Shields was a key part of the pitching staff that pitched them in the 2014 World Series. And Wade Davis, who was included in that trade, was the postseason MVP of 2015. But it just shows you, in 2013, there were fans who were so absolutely livid about the trade, they would have been willing to fire the general manager over it. Can't judge a trade unless we see how it completely plays out. And let me tell you something, when the Royals fans were cheering when they won back-to-back pennants, and it was Wade Davis on the mound with his arms up in the air, striking out the final batter for the Mets, I guarantee you there would not have been one single Royals fan who would have traded Wade Davis for Will Myers at that particular time. So anyway, I just found that to be pretty funny. Hey, let's get back to Scott Campbell at MTG Pack Foils. Another frequent asker of questions is, are the players who are locked out allowed to sign with independent teams if the lockout continues into the season? And how much of a blow would the sport take if it started with the season without its stars? That's a great question. Obviously, there's a couple of big stars who are still out there unsigned, the biggest one, of course, being Carlos Correa. I still don't understand why he's not a Houston Astro. He so perfectly fits the Astros. He needs the Astros. The Astros need him. We've talked about this before. What would happen if he had signed with the Bridgeport Bluefish or the Long Island Ducks or some other independent team that's out there? It's not going to happen. And one reason why I think it's not going to happen is I really think that, as stupid as the players and the owners are, I don't think they're stupid enough to cancel the season nor sacrifice the season. I honestly don't think they're that dumb. I do think that something will come about. Now, if it starts where we have a spring training and a Correa says, well, I got to play somewhere, I mean, that would be the ideal time for one of these independent minor league teams to swoop in and say, hey, here we go. You know, there are not as many independent minor league teams. Hell, there's not as many affiliated minor league teams. And it's funny, the way that Major League Baseball has been shoving minor league baseball, the players, the franchise and everything, shoving their face into the mud, may be the thing that eventually bites them in the butt and helps them lose that antitrust exemption, which they've had for more than a century, unwarranted antitrust exemption, but the one that they have nonetheless. Do I think baseball will be in trouble if their stars signed with a minor team? Yeah, I think that'd be a bad look. I think it'd be kind of cool to see Carlos Correa playing for the Bridgeport Bluefish or some team like that. Do the Bluefish even still exist? I don't know. I used to know that. It's so hard for independent minor leagues to exist in this market, but you know, it would be interesting to see. I mean, you couldn't, if you were like a team that was an affiliated minor league team, you couldn't just sign him, and he's not going to sign a minor league deal. So it is interesting. It is an interesting question. The question that comes about, and we saw this at one point when the strike took place in 94, and Julio Franco, who was still a wonderful player, still an all-star caliber player, played for the White Sox in 94, a team that looked like they had a really great chance to go to the World Series that year. When the strike happened and the lockout began, and during the lockout, the owners brought in replacement players, which was a complete catastrophe and a travesty. And Julio Franco did not sign with another team during the lockout, and he went to Japan. And I wonder if the lockout looks like it will go deeper than anyone wants, if some of the unsigned players would go to Japan or Korea and get a nice big old bag of money and be able to continue to play at a high level instead of waiting for the lockout to end. That's a definite possibility. There have been plenty of players in the past who have done that. I think the only other time there was a player who had been, if not in their prime, then close to their prime to do that was after the 1986 season, Bob Horner was a free agent, and that's when collusion was happening. People forget what an awful thing collusion was for baseball. And Bob Horner left and joined, I think it was the Yakult Swallows. I'm doing some of this from memory, but he played an entire season in Japan while he was still a more than capable major leaguer, and picked up a big pile of money, hit a bunch of home runs. The next year returned to the majors and played for the Cardinals, where he was supposed to take over for Jack Clark. But it didn't work out. Warner actually flamed out. So I don't know. To see a Correa, I mean, Correa would become an instant superstar, you know, instantly beloved, and make a gigantic pile of money. Would that be a bad look for baseball? Yeah, probably. Maybe the threat of that would be one to get him to the bargaining table. I don't know. But the collusion is going to be a little bit of a topic in the final one that we're going to talk about here. But it is a surefire bet that the powers that be in baseball are going to figure this out. Because if they don't, then it'll be a disaster for baseball. And I think everyone must know that, at least in some way. If you're going to make any bets, go to BetOnline, which remains the number one spot for all your sports action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From the NBA, college basketball, football, NHL, boxing, the bowl season, UFC, right down to your favorite Las Vegas casino game, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is where the game starts. Hey, I want to just bring up one last old request. And where the heck was this one? It was one that came from, it was a few years ago. I didn't lose that one. Oh, here we go. From Bill Stroop, at Bill Stroop. He sent me this one way back in 2016. And we had just seen the loud and sometimes obnoxious retirement parades they had for Jeter, for Rivera, and for David Ortiz. See, it wasn't all Yankee hating there. And what Bill Stroop asked us was about silent or unnoticed retirements, not Ortiz or Jeter treated, just those who disappeared that we may not have noticed. And that's interesting, because there have been instances of Hall of Famers whose careers kind of peter out, but a lot of times they have one last big hurrah or one last big send-off. You know, Phil Niekro, by the end of his career, was done, but he returned for one final game with the Atlanta Braves, and it was a, you know, Phil Niekro day. Randy Johnson's career kind of sputtered and sputtered towards the end. He had got his 300th win as a member of the San Francisco Giants and retired just before the Giants went on a big World Series winning spree. You know, there have been some Hall of Famers, like Jim Tomey comes to mind, who didn't get his big send-off, but partly because by the end of his career, he was bouncing around from team to team. He actually played in the postseason with the White Sox, the Twins, the Orioles, and the Dodgers. I bet you forgot that. Some players got injured before we got a chance to say goodbye to them. They were hurt, and then their careers just kind of ended. But there are three specific players who never got the send-off that they deserved because they were greats. All three of them are Hall of Famers. Two of them didn't get the big send-off because they just wouldn't retire. And one of them was a victim of the era of collusion. Let's go for the two that just wouldn't retire. And I'm going to be talking a lot about Ricky Henderson later this week on the 25th. It's his birthday, and we're going to talk a little bit about Ricky that day. So I'm not going to go on a deep dive in Ricky Henderson. But Tony Gwynn retired at the end of the 2001 season. And in 2001, Ricky Henderson got his 3,000th hit and became the all-time career run scored champion. And there was this thought that maybe he and Tony Gwynn were going to retire on the same day. And of course, Tony was the most beloved figure in the history of the San Diego Padres. And Ricky had only played a couple of years in San Diego, but he was certainly loved and respected by Padres fans. And it would have been a nice send-off for him that the two of them, these two surefire Hall of Famers, Gwynn and Henderson, would be able to ride off in the sunset together. Well, Ricky didn't do that. In fact, Ricky probably said it like that. He played 2002 with the Red Sox, and he played 72 games with the Red Sox. And then he found himself bouncing around between, you know, the Newark Bears of the Atlantic League. He played 30 games with the Dodgers in 2003, played all of 2004 with Newark, a minor league team, and then all 2005 with a minor league team in San Diego as a 46-year-old man. So if you happen to go, now he did indeed play his final games as a member of San Diego, just a member of the San Diego Surf Dogs, where he played 73 games. He managed to steal 16 bases and was playing alongside, and he was, you know, there was a handful of players on that team who had played in the major leagues, but most of them were players who were, you know, never made it. And Ricky Henderson, one of the greatest offensive players of all time. He didn't get to have a parade and a tour of, you know, of all the places he had played and everything like that, because he just was going to play until nobody wanted him. You know, his final, he played 30 games with the Los Angeles Dodgers in 2003. And the people watching him then didn't realize they were watching the final games of Ricky Henderson in the major leagues, but he still played minors. I wonder how many people were at a San Diego Surf Dogs game who didn't realize they were seeing the final game of one of the five greatest offensive players in the history of baseball. The other one who would not retire, when I was younger and I was growing up and I was first understanding baseball and understanding who the stars were and everything like that, was in the late 1970s. And it just was written in stone that the best pitcher in the National League, at least, was Steve Carlton. Steve Carlton, year in and year out, if he wasn't the Cy Young Award winner, he was certainly in the conversation. Year in and year out, he led the league in virtually in so many categories. In fact, I am going to go to baseballreference.com, the single greatest website in the history of the planet Earth, and I'm going to bring up some of Steve Carlton's numbers. Now, I brought up Ricky Henderson specifically because he was a much better player than Jeter. He was a much better player than Ortiz. You could probably count on a hand a number of players who were better overall offensively than him, and yet his career ended with a whimper. Now, when I was growing up, Steve Carlton had won the Cy Young Award the year I was born, 1972. I know we're not supposed to look at win losses, but he won 27 games for a 100-some-odd lost Phillies team, and made 41 starts and threw 346 innings and struck out 310 batters, had an ERA plus of 182, the best of the league. He wound up winning the Cy Young Award in 1977, 1980, and 1982, and had several other top five and Cy Young votes along the way. Constantly was leading the league in innings pitched, wins, in strikeouts, in batter's face, and ERA, all the stats that you saw, he was the standard. And then by 1984, at age 39, he started to slow down a little bit. And then by 1985, as a 40-year-old man, he was pretty much done. And the Phillies got rid of him. Just, he was their best pitcher in the history of the franchise. And after, 14 and a half seasons as a Philly and all those Cy Young Awards, he just didn't have anything left in the tank. And he was moving just perilously close to his 4,000th strikeout, which would have put him in the pantheon of the greatest strikeout artists of all time. He got that 4,000th strikeout as a member of the San Francisco Giants, because the Phillies just released him. He said, you're not good anymore. He was released. He got signed with the Giants. He won one game out of his six starts with the Giants. He was no good with the Giants. He got that historic strikeout, and then they released him, and he went to the White Sox. All right. That's it, Lefty. You're done. Nope. He showed up in 87, tried out with the Cleveland Indians, who desperately needed any pitching. Didn't quite work out in Cleveland. He got released there, got picked up by Minnesota. Now, he wound up getting a World Series ring for his trouble with the 1987 Twins, but the Twins didn't put him on the roster. They had one of the greatest pitchers of that era, and they said, you know what, we're better off having Dan Schatzer and Les Straker on our active roster, not you, Lefty. The ring fit. He was there for the ring ceremony and went to the White House. He got his third World Series championship because he won one with the Cardinals and one with the Phillies and one with the Twins. But you know what? By then, it was clear it was over. You're 42 years old. No, you're done. Nope. At age 43, he returned to the Twins. And in 9 2/3 innings, he allowed 18 runs. He was disastrous and could not make it through April. His final game, he allowed 8 earned runs in 5 innings. The game before that, he allowed 6 runs in 1 inning. He was just, it sounds mean, he had nothing left. He was done, and he was released, and he sent his services out elsewhere. Nobody picked him up. The best pitcher, basically, in baseball from 1972 till, I'll say, 1982. Who was better? Who was better in that stretch? Maybe you'll throw Nolan Ryan at me. Maybe you'll throw Tom Seaver at me. But you can't deny Steve Carlton's in that conversation and is a surefire Hall of Famer. Ace, dominant, pitched the Phillies to a World Series title. Should have been celebrated like nobody's business. And, you know, alas, he went to the Hall of Fame. Alas, he remains a beloved figure, as beloved as he could be. He's kind of an enigmatic character. But this was the type of pitcher who should have been you know, he got his number retired in Philly, but he should have had the huge ceremony for the great career he had. But he didn't want to give up. He wanted to pitch, and I admire this, that he was going to pitch until he had nothing left. I'm sure Steve Carlton looks in the mirror now and says, I left it all out there. Now, there's one more. And this was someone who, again, Hall of Famer for a big chunk of my early baseball loving life, was someone who was the standard for offense and MVP. I mean, how many batting titles did this guy win? I mean, he wound up winning 7 batting titles. Getting his 3,000 hits, you know, earning a most valuable player award, playing on how many all-star games? 18 all-star games. Rod Carew. Rod Carew was an amazing hitter, one of the great figures in Twins history, and then helped the Angels get to their first ever postseason in 1979, and then almost got him to the World Series in 1982. And in 1985, when he got his 3,000th hit, he was still an effective hitter. Now, he was no longer a 300 hitter. He'd fallen all the way down to 280. But, you know, and he no longer had the high OPS that he had when he was with Minnesota. But he was still an effective player. He was still an effective hitter. And it's still someone, if you put in your lineup, was going to get his hits and get, you know, make his at-bats count. And his contract ended after the 1985 season, when he got his 3,000th hit, and the Angels competed that year. They wound up losing the division to the Royals, went on to win the World Series. Well, he became a free agent after the 1985 season because his contract ran out. And as I alluded to earlier in this podcast, it was the middle of collusion. And nobody offered him a deal. The owners got together under the tutelage of Commissioner Peter Uberoff to say, don't sign free agents. And free agents were out there who would have helped teams. Carlton Fisk went out as a free agent. Nobody signed him. Tim Raines, a Hall of Famer in his prime, was a free agent. Nobody signed him. Jack Morris, one of the top aces of that decade, was a free agent. Nobody wanted to sign him. Andre Dawson had to hand the Cubs a blank contract for them to reluctantly sign him. All these players, Lance Parrish and Rich Gedman, were probably the two best catchers in the American League. Nobody wanted to sign him. And Rod Carew was, okay, he was no longer the batting champion, but he was still an effective hitter and would have helped many, many teams. Nobody signed him. Collusion ended his career. He could have helped the 1986 Angels, or maybe another team could have used his services, you know, as a free agent. But collusion ended his career. Nobody signed him. Also the same with Al Oliver, who was on the verge of 3,000 hits. And if he had signed, maybe he would have gotten to the 3,000 hits. We'd be talking about Al Oliver in the Hall of Fame. But he was a free agent after being an effective designated hitter with the Toronto Blue Jays. Collusion happened. Nobody signed him. His career was over. Rod Carew didn't have the celebration because his career just ended. Nobody signed him. So those are three people who deserved a giant parade. Ricky Henderson, the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, one of the five best offensive figures in the history of baseball. The best pitcher of his era, at least one of them, Steve Carlton, and one of the most prolific hitters of the 1970s and early 80s, Mr. Rod Carew. And boom, none of them got the send-off that they deserve. So there you go. So, hey, please, 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 I love answering questions like this. I love going back and finding them. So if anything you want me to talk about, send it to me at Sully Baseball on Twitter. Thanks so much for making us your first listen, as we're available on all your free podcasting platforms. And make your second listen, Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, and with expert analysis from Lee Sterling. Answering the questions, some who have been sitting in my folder for a couple of years. This has been Locked On MLB for the 20th day of December 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.